do more to prevent foreclosure with its Home Affordability and Stability Plan. If you own a home and you're having trouble making your payments or facing foreclosure, we can help. Call the National Mortgage Helpline. We now have the ability to stop foreclosure proceedings, forgive late payments and penalties, and reduce your mortgage payment to as low as 2%. Simply call 800-523-1208. Again, that's 800-523-1208.
An Ohio man sentenced to life in prison for murdering an elderly couple and his girlfriend's adult daughter says in a videotaped confession that he constantly has, quote, evil thoughts and thinks about killing. Samuel K. Littleton II pleaded guilty to three counts, each of aggravated murder and gross abuse of a corpse, in a deal with prosecutors to avoid the death penalty. Israel has arrested two Palestinian teenagers in the deadly stabbings of a West Bank settler family last month. The couple and their three children, the youngest only 3 months old, were sleeping in their home when they were attacked. The incident shocked Israelis. The investigation involved the detentions of hundreds of Arabs living in a neighboring village. As Holy Week is underway, Israel says it is doing its best to promote peace. National correspondent Connie Lawn has more.
Israeli authorities say tourism is at a peak this week with the observance of Easter and Passover. The observance come despite unrest in many Arab countries and some occasional missile and terrorism attacks against Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will outline plans for peace when he addresses a joint session of the U.S. Congress in May. He also thanks the U.S. for $205 million to develop a new Israeli-made missile defense system. Connie Lawn, IRN USA Radio News, Washington.
The chairman of the House Budget Committee says nobody wants the country to default, but there's no guarantee Republicans will agree to raise the debt ceiling. With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Precious Watson.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think nobody's home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-866-789-3377. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-866-789-3377. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-866-789-3377. That's 1-866-789-3377.
Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Today we are very pleased to have the authors of a new and important book entitled The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation. This book, which is indeed a very lively exchange of ideas, ranging from the philosophical to the practical, is nicely introduced on its cover, which asks, do animals deserve to be treated well while we use them to satisfy our needs and desires? Or do animals deserve not to be used to satisfy human desires at all? Should we seek merely to reform our present practices in farms, laboratories, zoos, and households, or should we give them up entirely? Providing the viewpoint that use of animals for human purposes should be abolished is Gary Francione, who is Distinguished Professor of Law at Rutgers University. Welcome, Gary.
Hi, thank you. I'm very happy to be with you, Lori.
And taking the other side of the debate is Robert Gardner, Professor of Politics at the University of Leicester in Great Britain, who argues for broad animal protectionism. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, Lori.
Robert, much of this debate stems from the opinion one holds regarding the moral status of animals. Why don't you begin the discussion by explaining what you think the moral status of animals compared to people is, or should be, and how that relates to your thesis on how humans should interact with and treat animals?
Well, that's some question. Well, I think first it's important to make a distinction between an ethic and a strategy, and our book contains both kinds of arguments. An ethic is an argument about what we think ought to be the case, whereas a strategy is concerned with how we get from where we are now to where we think we ought to be. I think the two are related. An ethic shouldn't be so far away from what exists now as to make it unrealistic or utopian. But Gary and I disagree on both ethics and strategy, probably more on strategy than ethics. I adopt an animal rights position, and I think it's important I emphasize an animal rights position because I've noticed in one or two of the reviews that my position's been somewhat misrepresented. Many animal rights advocates argue that what's wrong with our treatment of animals is their use per se, irrespective of what is done to them whilst they're being used. And this is Gary's position. It's an abolitionist position. It's also Tom Regan's position. I argue that there's no reason why an animal rights view has to be of this type. I adopt an interest-based theory of rights, where rights are allocated according to the degree to which they protect important interests. So we wouldn't want to say, for instance, that animals have a right to vote, since clearly this wouldn't protect any important interest that animals have. So in terms of the interest that animals have, we could include an interest in, say, life, liberty, and well-being. Now, cutting a long story short, I'd say that animals clearly have an interest in not suffering pain and distress. And this interest in not suffering, all things being equal, is equivalent to a human's interest in not suffering. Therefore, animals clearly have a right not to have suffering inflicted upon them by humans. At least they do if we say that humans have such a right. So it's clearly...
Rob, let me ask Gary now.
In the animals that cause suffering are illegitimate morally. And that's the basis of my position.
Gary Francione, are animals morally on the same par as people, or should they be? And how does that relate to your notion as to how we should be treating animals?
Well, they all sentient beings, in my judgment, have a right not to be used as resources. So although Robert talks about a right not to suffer or a right not to suffer unacceptably, I talk about a right not to be used. So we're really talking about, although we're both talking about rights, our theories are really very different. Now, you know, my view is, are there differences between humans and non-humans? Of course there are, Laurie. There are clear differences. And the fact that we are the only animals who use symbolic communication or language probably means that our minds are significantly different from animal minds. And my bottom line is, who cares? For purposes, it may be relevant for purposes as to who gets to go to a scholarship to the University of Leicester or to Rutgers University. That may be relevant. Intelligence or cognition may be relevant for that. But if the question is, should we be using X or Y in a painful biomedical experiment or as a forced organ donor, or should we be eating X or Y? As far as I'm concerned, as long as X and Y are sentient beings, I don't really care whether they're human or non-human, we have an obligation not to use them as resources.
Gary, do you think the animal welfare model of caring for animals, more or less the way it exists today, is a failure? Aren't the big organizations which advocate for animals, like the Humane Society, having a positive effect?
No, I think animal welfare reform is useless. As a matter of fact, I think it's worse than useless, because I think what it does is it encourages people to believe that they can be conscientious omnivores, they can consume humanely and whatnot, and they feel better about consuming. So no, I don't think that animal welfare reform works. And it can't work, Laurie, as I discuss in the book. Because animals are property, the economic reality is that their interests are always going to be protected only to the extent that we get an economic benefit. And so therefore, animal welfare reform, by and large, won't go much further than ensuring what I describe as the economically efficient exploitation of animals. I don't think animal welfare works. I think it's a horrible failure.
Robert, what do you think about the effectiveness of groups like the Humane Society and PETA on the lives and suffering of animals? And do you feel they provide valuable information to people to begin thinking about animal welfare?
Well, I don't think the reformist strategy is necessarily wrong. Partly because I think that the reforms that are possible to achieve, either in Europe or in the United States, are worth having for their own sake. and I don't see them as a hindrance to future, more far-reaching changes. Gary disagrees with this, and as he said, he puts forward two main arguments against this, what I call animal protectionist strategy, and Gary calls it new welfareism. The first is the counterproductive argument that animal welfare reforms are counterproductive because they make it more acceptable to exploit animals. And secondly, in any case, he argues that animal welfare reforms are almost always unsuccessful, not least because animals are property. I disagree with both of those positions, and maybe we'll have the opportunity to discuss them one by one as we go along.
Well, Gary, do you want to quickly respond to that, and then I can give Robert the last word?
Okay. Well, I think that if you survey the animal welfare reforms that we've had for the past several hundred years, or even if you just focus on the past 20 years, most of these things are reforms that would have happened anyway because they result in greater production efficiency in terms of the efficient exploitation of animals. So I think they would have happened anyway. And I think that's sort of the irony, is that most of the things that these animal welfare organizations are campaigning for are things that would happen and will happen anyway. And we can talk about specific examples if you want. But I really don't think that these reforms are. When you look at the amount of money and the amount of labor and energy that goes into getting these reforms, I would say that the bang for the buck is pathetic.
Gary, we have 30 seconds to the end of the break. Would you like to respond to that? I'm sorry, Robert.
Only to say that I agree to some extent that economic efficiency is a factor in animal welfare, but it depends really how you define economic efficiency in terms of its benefit to animals. And in addition, there are plenty of examples where producers have campaigned vigorously against proposed reforms on the grounds of economic costs. And maybe again we can go into some details as we continue.
I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner, and this is Animals Today. I'm glad you can join us on Animals Today, where each week we bring discussions and interviews about the important issues concerning animals, both in our backyards and around the world. Don't go away. We'll be back with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner.
Meet Eloy Flores, owner of a new Buick LaCrosse CXS.
I'm a former Lexus owner, so obviously picking the LaCrosse was the furthest thing from my mind. We test drove the Mercedes, we test drove Lexus, we test drove Volvo, but bottom line is they didn't have the standard options, so we would literally have to upgrade well beyond what we were ready to pay for what came standard with the LaCrosse CXS. My dad worked for Toyota for many, many years. When I told him I bought a Buick, he said, "What?" But when he saw it, he really loved it. Great interior, 19-inch wheels, you know, the heads-up display, the touchscreen navigation. There's something to be said about a vehicle that turns heads everywhere you go. If Buick keeps up with what they're doing, there won't be any need to go somewhere else. This is an incredible car.
To hear so more you and your Eloy's family have decided to get a dog or cat. We think that's great, and we want to remind you to adopt your next pet instead of buying. That's because there are so many lovable, adoptable dogs and cats waiting to go home that it just doesn't make sense to buy a pet from a breeder or pet store. And tragically, 50 to 70% of all animals that enter shelters are euthanized. That's millions per year. So when you adopt your pet from a shelter, most likely you really are saving a life. Did you know that most dogs sold in pet stores come from puppy mills, crowded, inhumane breeding facilities that exist simply for the profit of their owners? Did you ever consider that dog breeders are in business mainly to create and sell animals? Buying animals just makes pet overpopulation worse because it perpetuates unneeded breeding and takes away chances to live from sheltered animals. Even if you want a particular breed, you should still visit a shelter because 20 to 25% of animals housed in shelters are purebred. Or contact an animal rescue group that works with the breed you like. With not much effort, you can usually find your perfect companion. So remember, adopt and save a life. It'll give you a nice, warm, and furry feeling. This message is from Desert Paws. Visit us at Desert Paws.com. geico.org.
Geico has some bad news. There is no money tree, and there is no gold at the end of the rainbow. However, Geico could save you hundreds on your car insurance. No matter what the competition says, Geico has been saving people so much money, over 4 million drivers switched last year. So call Geico for a free rate quote today. It's easier than trying to shake down a leprechaun.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the proven breakthrough called Hydroxytone. It visibly reduces wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. Find out how you can try Hydroxytone free for 30 days.
She always looked good to me. I can't believe how young she looks.
Hydroxytone is now available at Ulta stores. But for this risk-free offer, you must call 1-800-221-1953. That's 1-800-221-1953.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-644-7850. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactiv Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-644-7850. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-644-7850. That's 1-800-644-7850.
Thank you for calling IQ for your free demo.
Yeah, what's the catch?
Excuse me?
Your ad says I can get a free demo that will increase my reading speed. So what is the catch?
Oh, no catch. We're so sure IQ will increase your reading speed and your brain power that we'll give you a free demo to try it for yourself.
Okay, but I'm a slow reader and I never remember what I read.
Well, with IQ, you can increase your reading speed up to 1,000%, allowing you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read just one. And because of this revolutionary program, you'll retain most of the information you read. Oh, but there is one thing.
The catch, right?
You could start reading up to 1,000% faster in just 7 minutes.
Aha! Wait, did you say 7 minutes?
To get your free demo of IQ from Infinite Mind, call now. 1-800-419-3267. Unleash your brain. Experience the power of IQ for free. 1-800-419-3267. That's 1-800-419-3267.
To Animals Today, we are with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner talking about their book, The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation. Gary, one of the hindrances to improving the lives of animals and lessening their suffering has to do with legal standing. And typically in the United States, one cannot file suit on behalf of an animal. Should that change? And if animals achieve legal standing, won't that radically change society in unpredictable ways?
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is the ability of an animal to file a lawsuit or a human to file a lawsuit on behalf of an animal. Do I think things would change if we could file lawsuits on behalf of animals or whatever? And the answer is not really, because what would the animal or the guardian bringing the lawsuit be seeking to enforce? The problem is the standards require very, very little, because animals are property. And that's the problem. Animals are economic commodities, Lori. They only have an economic value, and it costs money to protect their interests, and as a result, we generally protect their interests only when we get a benefit, primarily an economic benefit, from doing so. So the standards are very low. So if you give animals standards, you get humans standing to bring suit on behalf of animals, the standards that will be enforced are pretty meaningless. So that's really the problem.
Robert Gardner, should animals have the right to file suit on their own behalf? And if not, then what legal changes should be made on behalf of animals?
Well, I don't think that the concept of property itself has the explanatory utility that Gary thinks it does. Not being a lawyer, you perhaps expect me to say that. I think animal welfare legislation, we can agree, is not as rigorous as we would like, but in my view, that's down to a variety of factors, the absence of enough public pressure for change, and the ideology, the liberal ideology that's prevalent, particularly in the U.S., where property is regarded as more important than maybe it is in Europe and particularly the U.K.
Well, I would say, though, that there may be differences in how property is viewed in the United States and in Western Europe, but these are all capitalist countries that fetishize property and regard private property as an important value. But I would also say this, Laurie, that in the book, Robert maintains that property, the status of property, is per se not a problem because we could treat animals better than we are treating them. And the answer is, yes, of course we could treat them better than we're treating them. The problem is, as a matter of economics, it would create havoc if we started raising standards significantly, because then that would increase the price of animal products. And also, given free trade arrangements, if you have a particular country that raised animal welfare standards in a significant way, that country would basically be unable to keep out lower welfare products if the demand for the lower welfare products existed. And so, you know, there are lots of economic reasons why the status of animals as property means that animal welfare standards will always be low. And the bottom line is, as long as we think it's okay to inflict suffering and death on 56 billion animals a year that we eat, not including fish, as long as we think it's okay to do that, we're never going to find our moral compass. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Rob, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, Gary rather changed his argument from a legal one to an economic one, which a large degree which I can agree with. Many countries in the world have challenged the free market in effective ways which have benefited humans, so there's no reason why they can't do so for animals. And also, I would agree that the aim is to reduce suffering. The first priority is to reduce suffering, and I don't think this necessarily requires a change in the legal status of animals.
Well, but Robert, let's look at some of the welfare reforms that have occurred. For example, in Europe, there is a move away from the veal crate. But the reason why there's a move away from the veal crate is because agricultural economists have determined quite correctly that if you give veal calves a bit more space, you actually cut down dramatically on veterinary costs, and you make the production of veal more economically efficient. You can then call it happy veal or humane veal or whatever. And actually, veal consumption has gone up in Europe, and production costs have gone down. That's a classic example of how animal welfare reform works, isn't it? I mean, would you disagree with that?
Rob?
Yep.
You would disagree?
Yes. Veal crates disappeared in the UK many years ago now, actually. In terms of whether they've made veal meat more acceptable, I'm not sure about that. I think veal has always been a very peripheral part of a meat diet in any case. So it's probably not the best example that can be used.
Actually, there are studies that show that veal consumption has gone up in Europe, actually, as a result of or in direct relationship to the eradication of the veal crate. But
let's move on to another question about slavery. And I will ask both of you, does this debate have anything to do with human slavery? Frequently, one hears animal rights advocates making the analogy of our present treatment of animals to that of slavery, which was abolished just as animal exploitation should be. Personally, I find that this analogy only resonates for vegans, and most other people say there's little similarity between the slavery debate of the 1800s and animal rights today. Robert Gardner, what about the slavery analogy?
I think the comparison is unhelpful. And it's also ethically incorrect if you adopt, as I do, an ethic which says that what's wrong with our treatment of animals is not their use per se, as it would be with human beings in slavery, but the way in which they're treated whilst they're being used. So I don't see there's anywhere near as much of an ethical problem with the use of animals as there is with their treatment. Therefore, I don't see that the comparison is at all helpful. But of course, if, like Gary, you adopt a view which suggests that all uses of animals are unacceptable per se, then you will think that the comparison is worthwhile making.
Gary Francione, is the slavery analogy a good one?
Well, it is, insofar as if you look at the regulation of slavery and you look at the regulation of animal exploitation, you see some very, very strong similarities. Slaves were chattel property. Animals are chattel property. Just as there were laws that supposedly protected slave welfare, those laws didn't work because you really cannot give any sort of respect-based rights to property and expect the institution of property to continue. So there were all sorts of laws that protected the supposedly protected slave interests, and they didn't work. There are all sorts of laws that protect animal interests, and they don't work because animals are property. So I think that the analogy is that if you look at the function of slave welfare and you look at the function of animal welfare, you see that they function, that those schemes function very similarly. And what they share in common is they're both trying to regulate the use of sentient property. And it can't work. It doesn't work because once you start giving respect-based rights to property, you no longer have an institution of property. You can't do it. And so I think that the analogy is useful in that sense. What I think is problematic about it, and in the way a lot of there are many animal advocates who use the analogy in a very, very careless way, and what comes across to people is that is a racist message, and I think that's unfortunate, and certainly that's not the way I use it, and that's not the way that I have employed that analysis in my own work.
Don't go away. We're going to continue our discussion about abolition or regulation concerning animals with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. This is Animals Today.
Your mother always told you to say no to peer pressure. So when you hear how 4 million drivers switched to GEICO last year, you aren't swayed. Then again, those 4 million drivers probably saved hundreds by switching to the nation's third largest car insurance company. Maybe your mother was wrong. Maybe you could have joined that hippie commune in Montana. Or maybe you could save money by switching to GEICO today.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the proven breakthrough called Hydroxytone. It visibly reduces wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. Find out how you can try Hydroxytone free for 30 days.
She always looked good to me. I can't believe how young she looks.
Hydroxytone is now available at Ulta stores. But for this risk-free offer, you must call 1-800-221-1953. That's 1-800-221-1953.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think nobody's home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-866-789-3377. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-866-789-3377. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-866-789-3377. That's 1-866-789-3377.
I'm child behavioral therapist James Lehman. I know you need the Total Transformation Program to turn around your child's behavior, but for some reason you haven't tried it. Maybe you're skeptical and doubt that it will work for you and your child. Listen, I'm willing to give away 1,000 copies of the Total Transformation to the most skeptical of parents for free. All I need you to do is send me your feedback about how it works for you and your child, and the program will be free. You get the program for free, and I get the satisfaction of knowing how the Total Transformation helped your child. Anyone who says they can change your child's behavior should be willing to prove it. We're going to prove once and for all that the Total Transformation Program works for every behavior problem imaginable, and it'll be free to 1,000 of my most skeptical customers.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402. That's 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402.
If you're a business owner and you want to grow your business through direct mail with no out-of-pocket costs, keep listening. More customers equal more money, right? Well, now you can get more customers in your store using direct mail with no upfront costs through foot traffic marketing. If your store does $10,000 or more a month in credit card sales, foot traffic marketing will design for you a custom direct mail campaign with no upfront costs. Call now for free information and to learn more. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. Again, if you know that direct mail can help your business grow and your store already does at least $10,000 or more in credit card sales, call now and learn how you can get more customers with no upfront costs. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723.
Welcome back. We are speaking with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner. The book is The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation. Highly recommended. Let's talk about the concept of any use versus humane treatment of animals. That seems to be a key disagreement the two of you have. Gary Francione, would you respond?
Yeah, I think that is a key disagreement. For Robert, the main issue is treatment, because he's talking about a right not to suffer, or a right not to suffer unacceptably. And one of the things we discuss in the book is my problem with understanding what or how he can determine what an acceptable level of suffering is. But I think the other key difference there is that I focus on use. I do not believe that the differences between humans and non-humans allow us to use animals as resources. And when Robert says all things being equal, the life of a human is worth more than that of a non-human, that suggests to me that, you know, that's the sort of reasoning that seems to me to lead him necessarily to be saying that, well, the life of a very intelligent human is worth more than the life of a less intelligent human, or the life of a well-abled human is worth more than the life of a differently abled human. Because once you start making those distinctions between humans and animals, it seems to me that you only have speciesism to stop you from making those distinctions amongst humans.
Robert Gardner?
Well, I think the first point I want to get across is that focusing on sentience and a right not to suffer pain or having pain inflicted on animals by humans is a much more far-reaching ethic than animal welfare. I wouldn't want to equate it with animal welfare, for the reason that animal welfare would allow, an animal welfare ethic would allow for animal exploitation whenever there's a significant benefit to be had for humans, whereas my position would rule out the infliction of pain and distress on animals, whatever the benefits that are likely to ensue. Now, I think Gary's right in the sense that there is a philosophical problem with focusing on sentience alone. because it kind of implies that animals have no interest in continued life. And that's not really a position I would want to take, and certainly in the book I try to provide a more nuanced philosophical view. But I'd simply say this, that it's important when doing moral philosophy to ensure that the view presented isn't so far ahead of public opinion that it appears to be utopian. And I think focusing on this issue of sentience can provide some form of a great deal of public support, and it can also be, would maximize the unity within the animal protection movement.
Well, I focus on sentience as well. I just say that if you're sentient, then we have an obligation not to use you. And I also, as a resource, and I also think, Robert, that, you know, the idea that this is utopian is something I take issue with. I think if there's anything that's unrealistic and not practical, it's the notion that welfare reform is ever going to lead to the significant interest, the significant protection of animal interests. I don't think that that is going to happen. We've had animal welfare laws for the better part of 200 years now, and we're exploiting more animals now in more horrific ways than at any point in human history. And I think that, you know, I think actually people are far more receptive than you might think they are to arguments about veganism. I mean, I get emails every single day from people who have read my work or have listened to a podcast or who have looked at the website and who say, gee, you know, I've never really thought of it this way, that there really isn't any difference. You know, I'm all upset about people who are dog fighting, or I'm all upset about people who are throwing cats in trash bins and all sorts of things like that. And the reason why I think that that's bad is because I think it's wrong to inflict gratuitous suffering and death on animals. And I never really looked at my own lifestyle and the fact that I'm engaging in that gratuitous infliction of suffering and death every time I put them in my mouth or on my back or on my feet. And so I think that the idea that we can use creative, nonviolent ways of educating people about veganism, and that we can have great success in doing that, and indeed a much more cost-effective. I mean, if you take all of the money and the time and the effort, we're talking about many, many organizations that invest billions of dollars into these campaigns. I think the return on investment is horrible. And if we put that money into creative, nonviolent vegan education, I have absolutely no doubt that we would have a political basis for a really meaningful movement of people who oppose animal use.
Rob?
Three quick points to that, and I'll make them...
Sure.
I'll make them as brief as I can. The first point is a practical one, and your experiences, Gary, is simply not reflected in the fact that there are the vast majority of people continue to eat meat, and the vast majority of people don't seem to care too much whether that meat comes from factory farms or from free-range farms. The other main point I'd make is an ethical one, that you adopt the view that you can derive an ethic which prohibits the use of animals from the fact that animals are merely sentient, and so there's no need for you to go into the psychological capacities of animals. But that's a very controversial position within animal ethics. Even Tom Regan, for instance, rejected that position in his earlier work and went on to talk about animals being subjects of a life. But the problem with Regan's view is that he can't show that the psychological capacities of humans and animals, leaving the issue of marginal humans aside, are equivalent. So he has an enormous problem in deriving his use position from the psychological capacities of animals. And I think that's a real problem. My view isn't really that controversial. Most animal ethicists would accept that there are morally important differences between humans and animals that have to be taken into account.
Well, I understand that Regan and Singer take the view that there are morally significant differences between the minds of animals and the minds of humans. My view is there are differences. Those differences may be morally significant for certain purposes, but they're not significant or meaningful or relevant to the purpose of whether we use animals, eat animals, use animals in experiments, use animals for clothing, etc. As far as what you say about the success of veganism, let me say this. Within the animal movement, When you have large organizations in Britain and the United States not promoting veganism, or promoting veganism as what you do when you want to get to the superhuman level of care about animals because it's so daunting and difficult to be vegans, I mean, that is a consistent theme. In organizations both in the United States and in the United Kingdom, you have a tremendous promotion of veganism as difficult, daunting, and not necessary. And you have this distinction between vegetarianism and veganism. So when you have organizations which are saying there's a morally relevant difference between flesh and dairy, which I reject, when you have these organizations saying it's difficult to be a vegan and you know, and being a vegetarian or a conscientious omnivore is enough, if that's what the animal organizations are promoting, then is it any surprise that the general public doesn't get the message? The animal movement doesn't get the message. That's one of the reasons why I thought the book was an interesting discussion, because really, I think the animal movement is as much to blame as the institutionalized exploiters are, actually, for the problem that we have.
I want to ask next about the destruction of the environment by people and its effect on animals as it pertains to this debate, because surely we are inflicting great suffering upon animals, even causing them to become extinct through habitat destruction, suburban sprawl, and water and air pollution. Robert, do we have a moral imperative to radically change the way we live in order to minimize the harm we do to the earth and thus non-human animals?
Well, there are two separate categories there. I mean, if you adopt an ethic which puts emphasis, as both Gary and I do, on sentience, then you don't adopt a radical environmentalism which imputes intrinsic value to nature as a whole. That's not just sentient parts of nature, but also non-sentient and parts of nature and inanimate objects. So that I think environmental protection, as is been well documented, has important implications for the well-being of animals, and it's in for that reason that environmental protection is important, not just for human beings but for non-human animals too.
Gary, what's your take on the environment?
A radical environmental ethic.
Gary, yeah. Thank you, Robert. Gary, what's your take on the environment in the last few seconds?
Well, I think if you're concerned about the environment, I agree with Robert in that I don't impute inherent value to the environment per se. I mean, I think the environment is important for the lives of humans and non-humans who rely on the environment. But if you're concerned about the environment, the best thing you can do is to go vegan because of it takes between 6 and 12 pounds of plant protein to produce 1 pound of flesh. We would have 20% of the land that we presently have under cultivation. We'd only have 20% of the land that we have under cultivation for crops we would have under cultivation if we were all vegans, because we would actually require less land if we stopped eating animal products.
Thank you. More with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner. Don't go away.
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute. This message is presented by Desert Paws. Visit them online at desertpaws.org. That's desertpaws, all one word, .org.
Every day in the United States, tens of thousands of puppies and kittens are born. Unfortunately, there aren't enough homes for all these cats and dogs. One unfixed female cat and her offspring can be the source of more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. One female dog and her unfixed offspring can produce about 67,000 puppies. Too many cats and dogs are unwanted anywhere by anybody, so they end up being neglected or abandoned. Millions of healthy pets are killed in shelters annually. In the U.S., on average, 70% of the animals that enter the shelter end up getting euthanized. Fortunately, there is good news. There's a new answer to this dilemma. We can help to stop killing these animals by having our pets spayed or neutered. If you want a new pet, how about adopting one? You can rescue a cat or dog and save a life. For more information, please visit our website, desertpaws.org. Again, that website is www.desertpaws.org. And save a life. Save a pet's life today.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-644-7850. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactiv Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-644-7850. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-644-7850. That's 1-800-644-7850.
If you only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds, sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you, and the trial is free when you call 1-800-952-0957 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Sensa is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Sensa, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-952-0957. 1-800-952-0957. That's 1-800-952-0957.
I'm child behavioral therapist James Lehman. I know you need the Total Transformation Program to turn around your child's behavior. But for some reason, you haven't tried it. Maybe you're skeptical and doubt that it will work for you and your child. Listen, I'm willing to give away 1,000 copies of the Total Transformation to the most skeptical of parents for free. All I need you to do is send me your feedback about how it works for you and your child, and the program will be free. You get the program for free, and I get the satisfaction of knowing how the Total Transformation helped your child. Anyone who says they can change your child's behavior should be willing to prove it. We're going to prove once and for all that the Total Transformation Program works for every behavior problem imaginable, and it'll be free to 1,000 of my most skeptical customers.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402. That's 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402.
Welcome back to our final segment with Gary Francione and Robert Gardner. The book is The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation. I highly recommend it. It's an outstanding book. Gary Francione, what is your advice to teenagers who are interested in helping animals? What should they do? Do you want a six-year-old, a five-year-old to be vegan?
Absolutely. It'd be the best thing they could do to ensure that they will live a long and healthy life. Yes, I think that I think everybody should be vegan. I think it's a great idea. Idea for everyone. But I also think that, you know, depending on what age you are, there are all sorts of things you can do. You can always spend time educating your friends and family about veganism, and you should do that, and your classmates and whatnot. But I also think it's important to remember that as a result of our selfishness, we have brought many domesticated animals into existence that languish at shelters and whatnot. And I think it's great for kids to go and walk animals at the shelter and help with adoptions and help find foster homes for animals. So veganism and helping companion animals find homes and to have a better life, I think, are important things to do.
Very good. Robert Gardner, how do you advise teens who become interested in animal welfare?
Well, I would agree with Gary that the preference would be that they don't consume animal products at all. But I think we also shouldn't criticize those who are concerned about animals but who are not yet prepared to take a vegan route. So if a teenager expresses an interest in being a vegetarian, we should encourage that, even though the ideal position would be veganism.
Now a question to both of you about protesting the cruelty of rodeos. And I ask this because 2 weekends ago, my organization, Desert Paws, organized a rodeo demonstration against the rodeo that returned to my hometown of Palm Springs, California. And I will tell you, many of the customers shouted back at us that we were hypocrites to engage in this protest while wearing leather shoes or eating meat. Now, just to be clear, most of the protesters are indeed vegan and do not wear or consume animal products. But I thought the point raised is worth asking you two about. Gary, would it be hypocritical for a leather-wearing, meat-eating person to participate in the demonstration against rodeo cruelty?
Well, it would certainly be inconsistent. And I think that, you know, the reaction that you got from those people it probably illustrates that they recognize that many people who identify or self-identify as animal advocates are really inconsistent in their views. So, you know, I mean, for many years, I've been involved with this for 30 years. And, you know, I mean, it's very common for people to go up to folks on the street who are wearing fur while they're wearing leather or wool and criticize the people who are wearing fur. But there is no difference, morally significant distinction between fur and leather and wool. And so, I think, you know, this is my problem with single-issue campaigns, Lori. And I think I discussed this when we last talked, this idea that, you know, as long as we're eating animals, as long as we're wearing animals, and as long as we think it's all right for us to consume animals, then campaigns about, baby seal cubs or rodeos or circuses or zoos, et cetera, these single-issue campaigns really don't make a heck of a lot of sense. As long as we ourselves are engaging in the exploitation of animals when we have the only justification we have for doing so is pleasure, amusement, or convenience, why do we think we have the right to criticize other people's exploitation of animals for reasons of pleasure, amusement, or convenience?
Robert, if someone eats a hamburger once in a while, aren't they entitled to protest the rodeo if they feel like it? Would that be hypocritical?
Rodeos aren't something we have in the UK, but I take your point. I'm going to say fox hunting UK, I guess.
Okay, take the circus abuse.
Yes, which is an issue which has been quite prevalent here in the last few weeks, actually.
Right.
I don't think it's necessary. I think wearing leather and campaigning against the way animals are treated in general is problematic. But I don't necessarily see an inconsistency of campaigning, say, against factory farming if one still eats free-range animals. I mean, that seems to me to be an acceptable or at least a consistent moral position to adopt. But it's clearly easier, and I'm sure Gary has too, I'm sure everyone in the animal rights movement has experienced this charge of hypocrisy, and it's something which needs to be taken seriously.
I would say this. I think the difference between a free-range egg and a conventional battery egg is the difference between being waterboarded on a bare board and being waterboarded on a padded board. Is it better to be waterboarded on a padded board? Well, maybe, marginally. Is it still torture? You bet it is. And so I would beg to differ. I think Robert has a much more optimistic view of those sorts of welfare reforms than I do.
Gary, what if it's
the ethics, of course.
What if it's truly free range?
Yes,
or is that does not exist?
Meant by free range. I mean, Gary's been
correct
in the past to criticize the label free range when it's nothing of the sort. But I think a genuine free range operation is significantly different morally from a factory farm. And I think,
Robert, I don't dispute that. I think that murdering someone is morally different from raping them, torturing them, and then murdering them. I think those are two morally significant. I mean, those are morally different acts, but they're both wrong. And they both involve harm, and they both involve unjustifiable harm. And that's really what it's about. I mean, I just can't really understand and certainly can't accept this idea that, well, as long as we're doing less harm, then that's okay. That's like saying, well, you know, if you're going to kill somebody, don't beat them before you kill them. And the answer is, hey, you're missing the point. Some slave owners were better slave owners than other slave owners. Some really abused their slaves. Some treated their slaves better. Didn't matter. Slavery's wrong.
Robert, last few seconds, 15 seconds, final comments.
Well, that argument only holds if you think, as you do, that animals have exactly the same moral status as humans.
Those who, for purposes of being used, yes.
Those who don't accept that, the parallels between murder and rape simply don't apply to animals in the same way.
Very good. The book is The Animal Rights Debate, Abolition or Regulation by Gary Francione and Robert Gardner. Gary, Robert, please tell us how my listeners can learn more about you and read more of your essays. Gary?
www.abolitionistapproach.com is my website. I have essays, I have videos, I have interviews and things like that. And people can always contact me through the website.
And Robert?
My institutional website, Leicester University. You go to the politics department and look at the staff, and my website contains a lot of details about publications and an email address I can be contacted at.
Thank you very much. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.